Good morning. My name is Angela Ryder. I am the chair of the Arizona State Board of Massage Therapy. It is Monday, February 28th, 2022 at 9:02 a.m. and I'm calling this meeting to order. The chair of the Arizona State Board of Massage Therapy reserves the right to change the order of items published on this agenda, except for public hearings set for a specific time. During the board meeting and upon a majority vote of the quorum, the board may go into executive session to obtain legal advice from the board's attorney pursuant to ARS 38-431.03A3 on any items listed on the agenda. All meeting attendees whose presence is not required in an executive session may remain in the board meeting room when the board withdraws to chambers for an executive session. Any and all legal action by board members will only take place in open session. In accordance with open meeting law, the board has a civility policy that prohibits any type of disorderly conduct that disrupts the board from carrying out its business. Individuals found violating this policy will be asked to modify their behavior and act civilly. And if the disorderly conduct continues, the person may be removed from the meeting. Please also make sure you are muted if you are not actively speaking. Mr. Augerton, would you please call roll?
Yes, Madam Chair. Chair Ryder?
Present.
Vice Chair Moon?
Present.
Board Member DeRoost?
Present.
Board Member Tapscott?
Present.
Madam Chair, all members are present.
Thank you, Mr. Augerton. Pursuant to ARS 38-431.01H, the board may make an open call to the public during the public meeting, subject to a reasonable time, which is 3 minutes. Place and manner restrictions to allow individuals to address the public body on any issues within the jurisdiction of the public body. However, members of the board are not allowed to discuss or take legal action on matters raised during an open call to the public unless the matters are appropriately noticed for discussion and legal action. The board, however, may ask staff to review a matter or may ask that the matter be put on a future agenda. Be advised that a call to the public is not an opportunity for testimony for cases that are being reviewed by the board. Do we have a call to public?
Madam Chair, you have a hand raised.
Yes, I see Ms. Cordero. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Michelle Cordero, Director of Education at ASIS Massage Education. I appeared last month at the State Board meeting during the agenda item for the call to the public to address ongoing operational concerns which impact the ability of our school to effectively train, prepare, and graduate therapists through state licensing and into awaiting employment opportunities in the industry. Since the concerns and problems are not new, the question is why funding adequacy for a functional regulating board structure continues to be a problem. All of the board's operating funds are paid for by the industry through individual licensing fees for initial and renewal licensing. And of these monies, 10% are taken off the top and forwarded to the state general fund for operating state government. We understand that the current operational balance of the board revolving fund is in excess of $1.3 million. The industry has more than 30,000 licensed therapists across Arizona, of which more than 11,000 are currently active. They renew every 24 months. They change their addresses, their names. They request license verifications for other state applications they may be filing. And they often need to access board staff with a question or a need for guidance. Currently, there are only 3 employees plus a board director serving the 11,000 active therapists. The industry has 1 investigator, 1 person for all initial and renewal licensing, and a new employee being trained to assist with the licensing official. With the issues facing our industry, such as unlicensed therapists and human trafficking issues, no longer having field investigators or other measures such as photographs on licenses or a way for the board to regularly communicate with the licensure, the integrity of our industry in Arizona is weakened. It seems that these deficiencies are unique to the Massage Therapy Board. The latest development of the loss of Adobe software licensing and therefore the board's ability to serve the public with digital licensing this past Friday and no available access to revolving account funds to procure a new computer licensing product, the fiscal starvation of the board could not be more apparent. I have already seen discussion on social media of the challenge this puts on therapists now that the digital application process has been removed. I cannot imagine what this will do to an already overworked short staff. Application processes will be slowed down even more, hurting our students, our employers, and our schools. We strongly ask that this subject be scheduled for your next business meeting and that the board review and decide on a plan of action to contact the executive and legislative branches to request and receive access to increased board funding this calendar year and not have to wait until 2023 and 2024 for organizational relief. Thank you very much for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Cordero. Do we have another call to public? We do not. The board members should have had an opportunity to read the board packet for today. Will the board members let me know if there are any conflicts of interest? Mr. Elson?
Madam Chair, you've got a person raising their hand.
Oh, I apologize. Let me backtrack. I did not see that, and I'm not seeing who that is that has their hand raised.
Kara Holland.
Kara, you may go ahead.
Madam Chair, Chairwoman, members of the board, my name is Kara Holland, and I am a licensed massage therapist in the state of Arizona. A massage instructor and the general manager at Elements Massage Central Scottsdale. I speak to you regarding the lack of processes in place to effectively and timely complete applications for licensing. As Ms. Cordero did cover quite a bit of what I was going to say, I now need to find my spot again. The loss of online digital service in this day and age is, you know, it's paramount that we've lost this ability. And the lack of processes that are in place with initial applications, those awaiting licensing, wouldn't be finding out 3 months after filing that an ID wasn't clear, or that transcripts had not been received, or that their fingerprint card is lost or unclear. A simple checklist, and I understand the understaffing, but a simple checklist would speed up the process of locating what items may be missing from applications, and the applicant should be notified at least within 36 hours of that deficiency, not 3 months later. I do have a staff member here who applied in November last year, the end of November, was just informed 3 weeks ago with her reaching out to the board office that her ID wasn't clear. And then 2 weeks after that, contacted and told that her transcripts hadn't been received. So there is definitely lack of communication with applicants. I and many other businesses and applicants are begging the board to really find out what the deficiencies are in the massage licensing office and correct them in a timely manner. Massage businesses are struggling to meet client demand due to the fact of licensing is taking an insane amount of time to process, not to mention therapists that are not able to work in the profession in which they spend a good amount of time and money obtaining the education to do so. I understand the lack of staffing, but there has to be some processes in place in order for these applicants to be able to get out in the workforce. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Holland. Do we have any other calls to public that I'm not seeing on my screen? And it looks like we do not. So I will move forward. The board members should have had an opportunity to review the board packets for today. Will the board members let me know if there are any conflicts of interest? And it appears that there is not. Next, we will discuss the massage board open minutes from January 24th. Have all of the board members had an opportunity to review the massage board minutes, open minutes from January 24th, 2022? And is there any discussion to be had regarding these open minutes? And I will take the silence as a go ahead. I move to accept the massage board open meeting minutes from January 24th, 2021.
Chairperson Greider, oh, sorry.
Go ahead. I believe you mean 2022, Madam Chair.
2022, I apologize.
This is Michael Tapscott. I second that motion.
And can we do a roll call vote, Mr. Augerton?
Yes. Board Member DeRoost?
Aye.
Board Member Moon?
Aye.
Board Member Tapscott?
Aye.
Madam Chair?
Aye.
Motion passes.
Thank you. In today's meeting, we are honored to have Laura Allen Clayton present at our board meeting, and she will be providing the members, staff, and the public the presentation on ethics and scope of practice in our industry. Laura Allen is a graduate of the Shaw University and the Whole U School of Massage Therapy. Laura has been a licensed massage therapist since 1999 and an approved provider of continuing education under the NCBTMD since 2000, offering classes in professional ethics, research literacy, business and marketing, massage therapy techniques, and training for those who want to be instructors of massage therapy. She has taught classes all over the U.S., Canada, and Europe. And Laura has a regular ethics column on Heart of Bodywork, which appears in Massage and Bodywork magazine. She has numerous articles published in massage publications, including the International Journal of Therapeutic Massage and Bodywork, Massage Magazine, Massage Today, Massage and Bodywork magazine, and is the author of numerous books. Laura Allen, welcome and thank you for being here. The virtual floor is now yours.
Thank you for having me. I'm about the least technical person in the world. Can you hear me?
We can, Laura.
Okay. I don't know why my camera is showing that it's on. I don't know why I'm not seeing myself on video, but if it's okay with you, I'll just go ahead and proceed.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Angela and I had, when she approached me about this, we had talked about licensed therapists going outside of scope of practice, and then, of course, also unlicensed individuals that are performing massage under some other name. And first of all, I want to thank you all who are serving on the board. I have served on our board myself for a period of 5 years between 2006 and 2011, so I know what a job it is, and thank you for inviting me here today. So I'm going to get right to it, and I also have a handout that I prepared. I'll email this to you, Angela, after this meeting, and you can feel free to share it with board members or whoever, you know, anyone else that wants it. We have got this problem in every state. This is certainly not something that only happens in one place, but we have a lot of licensed therapists who are going outside of scope of practice, performing services that involve touching genitals, such as tantric massage techniques, and steaming the vagina, which unlicensed people are also doing. And I realize that there is that Tantra is it's the appeal to antiquity of it. Well, it's been around forever, so it must be all right. But since we in the massage profession go to great lengths to separate ourselves from sex workers, I think it's a thing that this is even an issue. It seems as if massage therapists who have chosen to do these things are not concerned about separating themselves from sex work. And it's a poor reflection on our licensed therapists who go out of their way not to commit any ethics violations or do anything sexual to have this going on. We've also got people who are performing psychological and counseling services that they are not qualified to provide. A weekend CE class does not make anyone an expert on trauma. And I think I have seen reports of it being an issue that some people are even traumatized even further because they're working with someone who does not have a clue what they're doing or what the client might be actually going through. I have also seen a lot of therapists performing techniques and using medical devices that are in the scope of practice of other licensed profession, such as aesthetic procedures, joint manipulations, body sculpting, extractions, you know, the list just goes on and on. And also diagnosing and prescribing. I mean, that's been around forever and it's around all the time. All you have to do is get on social media and see that someone says, my mother is feeling like so-and-so. And then immediately, you know, 50 massage therapists chime in without any knowledge and say what's wrong with them. My favorite expression is ask your doctor if a Facebook diagnosis might be right for you, because it does seem to be a real issue. So all of these things, though, come down to one thing to me, and that is that unless and until a member of the public gets harmed and files a complaint with the board, or files a criminal or civil complaint, not much is done about this. And that also is the problem with unlicensed people who are performing massage and possibly calling it something else. Most of them go by any kind of funny name they can pull out of the air instead of using the word massage. You know, in the general scheme of things, when law enforcement has murder and meth labs and all other manner of stuff to worry about, policing massage therapy is way, way down on the list unless there is a blatant case of human trafficking or prostitution that's highly visible going on. So there are a lot of people who are circumventing the law by practicing massage. Bless you, Mr. Elson. Thank you. The practice of massage, but calling it some other name in an attempt to avoid having to have a license. So I did what I call a scientific Facebook poll the other day on several. I have several social media pages on Facebook, a business page and a personal page and all that. And I asked for people to massage therapists specifically to give me the names of some of the things that people are calling this in order to avoid using the word massage. And I received a very long list of answers, which I'll email to Angela after we get off here. Now, we have to keep in mind that some states do regulate some of these things. That is why I really wish that we had national standards for massage. I also got a piece of hate mail late last night telling me that, you know, I didn't have any business trying to get people who are touching someone in trouble. I said, you know, this is about the law. And they said, well, you should just wish that everybody could touch everybody. Now, this was actually a comment from a massage therapist who has been licensed for about 40 years. So it's kind of appalling to me that they're okay with a free-for-all going on. But some of the terms that I received from massage therapists are acupressure, aromatouch, Bowen therapy, fascial stretch therapy, flexology. It's just a very, very long list. Myopractic myologist. Now, I have noticed from my time serving our board and from being interested in the governance of massage for many, many years, that a lot of state boards have language, regulatory language, that states what the legal designation of is supposed to be used for a licensed person. In my state of North Carolina, it's actually licensed massage therapist and body worker. The majority of states use licensed massage therapist. Some use certified massage therapist. I believe there used to be one state that used registered massage therapists, but I believe they have changed that. So our board goes a little bit further, and I'm sure that some boards do. I haven't read all of the Arizona massage law, but some boards also specifically state terms that may not be used by an unlicensed individual, and that includes, in our language, it includes masseur, masseuse, anything that has the word massage in it. Now, one thing that our state board has done is to publish a list of modalities, which will be in the paper that I send to you after this meeting, publish a list of modalities that require a license. And that list has been added to for years and years. And usually that happens whenever somebody questions something and says, you know, do you have to have a license to do this? And that list has grown over the years. And I'm sure it will continue to grow as people, you know, question other things. So there are also instances where unlicensed people are allowed to do massage, and that usually applies to ministers, Native American healers. There is usually a list of Eastern modalities that do not have to be licensed. When North Carolina first established their board, I happened to be working at that time for the massage school that I attended, and the owner of that school was on the first board in North Carolina. So I was privy to a lot of what was going on, since I had to help her do research on, she was on the rules committee for the first board. I assisted her in gathering research from other states that already had licensure to see what they were doing and, you know, read other states' rules and all that while we were trying to get our own rules together. So the Reflexology Association were the first people who said, we don't want to be licensed. And it rolled along that way for quite a few years, but a few years ago, they were, in fact, licensed. So I get the whole thing. The school that I went to was very heavy on Eastern modalities and energy work. However, when that work involves manipulating soft tissue, I think it's time to, you know, time to require a license for that. If it's one of these hands-off energy modalities or a modality where they are just touching the body but not manipulating anything, that's a different thing than someone who is actually manipulating soft tissue. Now, I have taken reflexology classes, and I've had reflexology as a consumer, and there's no way you can do that without manipulating soft tissue. And that is the case with a lot of other things, like the Thai massage. A lot of Thai massage, even in my little bitty town, which has 4,000 people, is being done here under the name Thai yoga. But the practitioner is manipulating soft tissue. So those are just some of the problems that we have industry-wide. And, you know, boards, I think what a lot of the time what massage therapists themselves don't even understand is that boards do not have jurisdiction over unlicensed persons. About the most they can do is send a letter to someone saying, you know, it's come to our attention that you're doing unlicensed massage, cease and desist. And, you know, whether that's worth the paper it's written on or not, who knows, because I don't think it's had a very big effect on people who are doing those things. There was a big festival in my town, and there was an unlicensed person who happens to be a personal trainer. He was photographed and put on the front page of the newspaper with a massage table performing massage on a client. And it actually had his name and said, so-and-so at the Time of Life Festival, you know, performing massage. Apparently he freaked out. And the very next day, the paper printed a retraction and said, so-and-so was not performing massage yesterday. Well, everybody saw him. It was obvious he was performing massage. But he did not want to call it that to keep himself out of trouble. So he persuaded the paper to publish a retraction. And I think things go on like this a good bit. But again, boards do not have the personnel to deal with it. They often do not have paid investigators that can go out and deal with it. And in the final summation of it, until they harm the public, probably nothing will happen. I'll be glad to hear a comment or a question if anybody has one.
Laura, I do have a comment. It might be a comment. It might be a question. When it comes to the rules and statutes of various boards, do you think it would be beneficial to consistently update the language? I mean, considering that every year, there's more and more people practicing under the guise of massage therapist therapy, calling it something else. For instance, in Arizona statutes, it indicates being able to, people who are not required or are exempt from having a license in massage therapy, also indicating that the client is clothed. However, I would say in my personal experience, I've worked on plenty of clients who are clothed and still performing massage therapy because I am manipulating tissue. It's just I'm doing it through their clothing. I think in my opinion, maybe consistently updating the language that's being used to define massage therapy might be beneficial across the board. That would be a question and opinion.
Well, I would have to agree with that because any of us who have been practicing massage for any length of time, it's been whatever this is, 22 or 23 years for me. I also have massaged plenty of people who were clothed or at least partially clothed because they did not want to remove clothing. And yes, updating the language regularly is a good thing. If it's not part of the Practice Act, my understanding was that when I was on our board in North Carolina, that we could change rules and guidelines without having to have any legislative interference or going through the legislature. It was only the Practice Act, if changes were to be made in that it had to pass through the government. But I think the rules and guidelines of boards are not subject to that, and that you can update your rules and guidelines without going through a big legislature hassle. So yes, I think it would be a good idea. But again, still, it even though our list in North Carolina keeps getting longer and longer with the things that a license is required for, I don't see that there's very much being done to enforce that. And I'm just guessing that that's probably the case in most states, especially during this pandemic where a lot of people have been working at home. Board meetings have been having, virtual meetings like the one we're having here instead of meeting in person. And I don't think the personnel is there to put a stop to a whole lot of this. So I think it's a catch-22 situation. But I would love to see the states come together. Maybe the Federation of State Massage Therapy Boards can do something about it. I don't know. But I would love to see some national standards so that, if reflexology has to be licensed in one state, then it needs to be licensed everywhere. If there's other modalities that are licensed in one state, it needs to be licensed everywhere. Now, Florida, and I think maybe one other state, I can't remember if it's Arkansas, they actually license Reiki. You have to have a massage license in order to do Reiki in Florida. But I'm guessing that there are a lot of people who ignore that, just like there are people ignoring all the rules who are doing these unlicensed modalities. There are even some franchise going on, it's my understanding, that they're calling themselves Stretchology or something like that. And their employees obviously are doing massage, but they're leaving the name massage out of it. So it's a big problem everywhere. I honestly do not have have an answer for it just because it's such a widespread problem.
Well, I know that there's another industry professional, Sandy Fritz, I believe, who is leading a consortium of many different professionals and trying to gauge, and kind of come to a consensus of the language that is being used across these different professions and, you know, noticing the difference. And that might be something for LMTs to become a little bit more involved with too, just to kind of get a better perspective from these other industries that are offering what appears to be massage therapy.
Well, you know, something I'm friends with Sandy, and I admire what she's doing, and I also intend to be on that consortium, which I think I saw was in the end of May and the first few days of June, and that's open to anyone who registers. So I do think it will be helpful to get input from other professions. You know, massage therapy is within the scope of practice of a good many other professions. The thing about it is, for instance, I personally have a chiropractor who was a massage therapist before she gained her chiropractic license. And she no longer maintains her massage license. So she advertises herself as a chiropractor, not a massage therapist, even though that's in her scope of practice and she can do it. The law prohibits advertising yourself as a massage therapist if you're not a licensed massage therapist. So a nurse, an esthetician can do a certain amount of massage. You know, they can massage your shoulders while your facial is working. A nail tech can massage up to the elbows while you're getting your nails done, and up to the knees while you're getting a pedicure. I mean, there's just a lot of overlap there. So I think it will be helpful to get the perspective from other professions. But there is one issue, you know. Years ago, I don't know how many of you are familiar, but there was an effort made to define massage. It was the Massage Therapy Body of Knowledge. And, you know, that was put out there for comment for months. It was disseminated through all the organizations. It was disseminated in this magazine and that magazine. It received less than 600 comments, and I know for a fact that about 100 of those were from Sandy Fritz, and another 50 or so were from me. And when it came out, it was criticized until the cows came home. And my attitude at that time was, you know, this is like voting. If you're not going to participate, then shut up and sit down. You know, if you're not going to offer your opinion, then don't complain when it comes out. And of course, that has never made it into law. The ELAP is another thing, you know, that was a very good thing for trying to get some standardization going. It's not the law, you know, it's suggestions. So I do think meeting with other professions and getting overlap where we can and getting those things clarified in the language, it is a good thing. It's all, collaboration is almost always a good thing. So,
agree.
I hope that as many people as possible will avail themselves of that consortium because it should be very enlightening.
Agreed. Do any of the other board members have a comment or question for Laura Allen?
Well, I thank you all for having me. And best of luck to us all.
Thank you so much, Laura. We really appreciate you attending today and shedding some light on and giving your opinion on the industry and how we can do a little bit better. So thank you so much.
Thank you, and I'll send you that paper in just a short while so you can share it with the other board members.
Wonderful. Take care.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Very good. All right. We're going to be going into cases, but I would like to motion for an e-session for some legal advice prior to going into these cases. Mr. Augerton, would you mind?
Madam Chair, can we get a second for your motion?
Yeah.
Madam Chair, before we do that, can we confirm that Monique Cody is on the call?
Yes, I'm here as the board's independent advisor. And since the request for an e-session for legal advice is in regards to these cases, I'm assuming that it's myself that would go in as your legal advisor and not Mr. Monahan.
Absolutely.
Okay, very good. I do motion that we go into an executive session to obtain legal advice prior to seeing these cases.
Madam Chair, is there a second to your motion?
Yes, this is Michael Tapscott. I second that motion.
And can we do a roll call vote, please?
Yes. Board Member Bailey DeRoost?
Aye.
Board Member Moon?
Aye.
Madam Chair?
Aye.
Board Member Tapscott?
Aye.
Procedurally, Monique, if you'll wait, I will send you a link for e-session. And Mr. Roost, you'll be receiving a text. So give me about 2 minutes to get that done for you guys.
Do I need to exit this meeting and then come back in?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
Do we have all the board members back from the executive session? It is now 9:52 a.m., and we are returning from executive session. Next up, we are going to begin the cases. But first, I will say upon a majority of the vote of the board may go into executive session, as we just have, pursuant to ARS 38-431.03A2, to discuss or consider records exempt by law from public inspection, including the receipt and discussion of information or testimony that is specifically required to be maintained as confidential by state or federal law, and or ARS 38-431.03A3 to obtain legal advice from the board's attorney, as previously mentioned. Members of the public community, please be advised that when the board is reviewing cases, some of the information being discussed is done so in great detail and can be graphic in nature. Attending these meetings is done so at your own discretion. And in an effort to alleviate anxiety for the claimants, we've asked the board staff to contact the claimant prior to their case being heard so they do not have to attend the entire board meeting. Our first case that we are covering today is going to be case 22-133, Adrian Hernandez, license number 24483. It is Monday, February 28th, 2022, video conference with the Arizona State Board of Massage Therapy for the matter dealing with Adrian Hernandez, case number 22-133, license number 24483 is scheduled to be heard. The subject of this hearing is set forth in the complaint and notice of hearing. This is a formal administrative hearing to determine if there have been any violations of the board's statutes and rules and whether disciplinary action is warranted. Mr. Pemberton, will you please call roll for this hearing?
Yes, Madam Chair. Board Member DeRoost?
Present.
Board Member Tapscott?
Present.
Vice Chair Moon?
Present.
Chair Ryder?
Present.
All members present.
Let the record show that the board members have been furnished with copies of the complaint and notice of hearing, the respondents' answers, and the pleading, all pleadings of record. Will the parties please identify themselves, beginning with the state, followed by the respondent?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board. Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan representing the state today.
Thank you.
For the record, my name is Monique Cody. I'm an assistant attorney general who will be your independent advisor on this case today.
Thank you. And is Mr. Hernandez on the teleconference?
Present.
Thank you. Mr. Hernandez, are you represented by an attorney?
Today, no.
Okay. Are you ready to proceed?
At the moment, I did get off the phone with General Attorney Seamus, I did have a question, but yes, I'm ready to proceed.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, we do have a preliminary matter. The state did file a motion to deem in this matter based on the fact that we had not received responses to two separate complaint and notice of hearing mailings. Both of them went out regular, certified, and email. We did get notice that two of them came back last time as undeliverable, so we re-noticed. The regular mail did not come back as undeliverable. As you can see today, Mr. Hernandez is here. However, I will not speak for him, but it is his contention that he filed an answer. So the state will respectfully defer to the board and Mr. Hernandez on that matter.
So with that being said, Mr. Monahan, is it the board's duty to continue proceeding with this hearing today?
Well, that's up to you, Madam Chair. If there was an answer filed, the state would not oppose a continuation. However, I think that that's something you should confirm with staff and the IA.
Sure. This is your independent advisor, Monique Cody. As a matter of procedure, an answer was due within 30 days of service of the complaint and notice of hearing. If Mr. Monahan could provide to us the date that the answer would have been due, and then if an answer was received, the board can compare whether it was timely received or not. That would be helpful.
Absolutely. The answer was due end of day, February 24th. That would have been Thursday.
Did we have the same situation happen last time we were hearing this case?
No, Madam Chair. That was the notices had come back as undeliverable.
Okay. I would like to defer to the other board members to discuss how we would like to proceed with this case.
Madam Chair, if you could, for the state, confirm whether there was an answer emailed to the investigator?
No, there was no answer received. The return receipt mail green card was signed for on January 31st, but we have received, and I've received it back, but no response.
Mr. Hernandez, you have your hand up.
Yes, yeah, so within the timely period that I was supposed to respond, I was able to send out two emails to Mr. David Elson responding to these questionnaires based on the cases that we're going over today. So I understand that the mail did come back undeliverable in the physical form, but I was able to respond electronically through email to Mr. David Elson.
Mr. Elson, do you have that information?
He's talking about the investigative questionnaire, not the complaint notice of hearing.
Okay.
Okay, so that is my fault. So I was confused by the two. So, yeah, so then my apologies. I did fail to respond in a timely manner. So I do apologize.
I would like to defer to the other board members as to how we would like to proceed.
This is Michael Tapscott. Unless I'm missing something, I don't see any reason not to proceed at this point. I don't think that Mr. Hernandez is at a disadvantage, and that we still have evidence in front of us. He can still testify. We can still discuss this matter, and we should move forward.
This is Vice Chair Moon. I agree. I think we should proceed.
Yeah. Excuse me, board members, just to clarify, if we are proceeding, would that be with a motion to deem? Because the motion to deem does not allow Mr. Hernandez to give any testimony based on the actual substantive matter. Or are we continuing this to do the formal hearing?
I was under the assumption that we were continuing the formal hearing.
To the next meeting?
I was assuming today.
No, the state has not filed any exhibits because there was no answer. So all that was filed today was the motion to deem the allegation. So if the state wants to, if the board does not want to deem the allegations, then I'm sorry, Monique, this is your route, but then you can just continue the formal hearing.
Okay. I apologize. This is new territory for us. So I would like to motion to continue the hearing today.
To continue the hearing to the next board meeting on March 28th?
I would like to, my motion is to continue the hearing today.
You would like to hear the motion to deem today. Is that what you, is that what you're saying? Okay. The state has no issue with continuing with the motion to deem today. It's just that I am not prepared to move forward. So if you would like a formal hearing with you know, all the bells and whistles and witnesses, then we would need to move it to another date. However, what I'm hearing is that you just want me to proceed with my motion to deem.
That is correct. However, I will wait to see if there is a second on that motion, or if there is addition, if there is a different motion.
This is Michael Tapscott. I'm hesitating to weigh in on this because I need to understand better if both parties are well represented enough to move forward today, or if that places either side at a disadvantage.
There are only two options available to the board today. One is to move forward with the motion to deem, which means that due to the respondent's failure to provide an answer within 30 days, that the factual allegations are deemed admitted. So if you move forward today, the respondent would not have an opportunity to try to refute any of the factual allegations. And then the conclusions of law are based on the factual allegations. So that's one choice. The motion to deem, the respondent would, at the board's discretion, could make a brief statement on any mitigating factors when the board is in the process of deliberating what discipline would be appropriate. So moving forward today, no discussion on findings of fact or conclusions of law, but discussions on disciplinary action. If the board wants to have a full hearing and provide the respondent an opportunity to respond to the factual allegations, then a motion to continue this until March 28th to allow both sides to provide exhibits and a witness list would be appropriate. So those would be your two options today.
Thank you for that clarification.
This is Vice Chair Moon. I would be more inclined of proceeding or pushing to the next meeting, just so that we can give Mr. Hernandez the opportunity to share his side or provide any feedback.
Would you like to make a motion, Ms. Moon?
Yes.
And the state, I apologize, Vice Chair Moon. The state would like to put on the record that Mr. Hernandez is currently under summary suspension, so there is no public health or safety issues or ramifications. Sorry
Thank
about
you. That. So can I get the meeting date for the next, it's March
28th.
And the language is to
move to continue this matter until March 28th and just continue the matter. Because if Mr. Hernandez fails to respond to the notice, then it would be again a motion to deem. So just continue the matter until March 28th.
So Vice Chair Moon, I would like to make a motion to continue this matter until March 28th. And that is case... Do I need to cite the case number?
No, we're on the item on the agenda, so it's understood.
Okay, thank you.
I second that motion. And Mr. Overton, can we do a roll call vote, please?
Yes, Board Member DeRoost?
Aye.
Vice Chair Moon?
Aye.
Board Member Tapscott?
Aye.
Chair Ryder?
Aye.
The motion is approved.
And then, I'm sorry, I do have thoughts on a second motion in this matter. At the board's discretion, you could also move to extend the deadline for respondent to provide an answer and to provide exhibits until, I don't know, maybe March 14th, or because, which would be 2 weeks out from what could be a hearing. The reason I say this is it puts the state in an awkward position if we move to continue it and then there's absolutely, you know, radio silence by respondent. So at the board's discretion, a motion could be made to provide a firm deadline for respondent to provide an answer to the complaint and a list of witnesses and exhibits for the hearing on March 28th.
Thank you, Monique.
I would like to move that the respondent provide an answer to the complaint by March 14th, by the end of this day.
Understood.
This is Board Member DeRusen. I second that.
And a roll call vote, please, Mr. Alberton.
Board Member DeRoost?
Aye.
Vice Chair Moon?
Aye.
Board Member Tapscott?
Aye.
Chair Ryder?
Aye.
The motion is approved, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, Ms. Huckabee is the complainant in Mr. Hernandez's case. This is Ms. Huckabee. I know this is not what we had discussed, so I will be in touch with you. I will give you a call today, okay? Thank you.
Okay, so that is that case, and we will move on to the next case. The next case, number 21-163, James Saylor, license number 16208. The case, next case is the matter of dealing with James Saylor, case number 21-163, license number 16208, is scheduled to be heard. The subject of this hearing is set forth in the complaint and notice of hearing. This is a formal administrative hearing to determine if there have been violations of the board's statutes and rules and whether disciplinary action is warranted. Mr. Augerton, will you please call roll once again for this hearing?
Yes, Madam Chair. Board Member DeRoost.
Present.
Vice Chair Moon.
Present.
Board Member Tapscott.
Present.
Chair Ryder.
Present.
Four ayes.
Let the record show that the board members have been furnished with copies of the complaint and notice of hearing, the respondent's answers, and all pleadings of record. Will the parties please identify themselves, beginning with the state, followed by the respondent?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board. This is Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan representing the state today.
Thank you. And Mr. Saylor, are you present on the teleconference today?
It is my understanding that he will not be participating.
Okay.
And, I would like to, for the record, notice my appearance as your independent advisor. I'm Monique Cody, an Assistant Attorney General.
All right. Since it appears that Mr. Saylor is not present, at this time, I would like to ask the state if they wish to make an opening statement.
Yes, I do, Madam Chair, members of the board. Thank you. My name is Seamus Monahan, again, representing the state in this action today. This action is before you because the respondent committed multiple actionable violations of board statute and rule against HG on May 28th of 2021 while receiving massage therapy services. The state will show through evidence proffered through HG that respondent began the massage by rolling down the sheet on HG's body below her pubic area, to her pubic area, at which time he placed a washcloth over her breasts. The evidence will also show that the respondent then began to massage into HG's pubic area and up to her breasts multiple times, at times pushing down on her pubic area. The evidence will also show that the respondent exposed HG's buttocks and massaged into her inner gluteal cleft during the course of the massage. Furthermore, after this action, HG immediately reported the allegations to respondent's employer and reported to the board within 2 weeks. Respondent immediately quit his job prior to the complaint being filed, and this is how the case came before you. The state will also use the board's investigator to substantiate this information and to provide procedural background information on the posture of this case. The testimony today will support violations of ARS Title 32, Section 4253A8, which states committing an act of malpractice, gross negligence, or incompetency. It will also prove ARS Section 32, 4253A10, which states engaging in conduct that could result in harm or injury to the public. Also, Arizona Revised Statute Section 32, 4253A14, which states engaging in the performance of substandard care by a massage therapist due to a deliberate or negligent act, regardless of whether actual injury to the person cared for, is established. ARS Section 32, 4253, 815, which states engaging in sexual activity with a client as it relates to ARS 4253B2C, which defines sexual activity as making sexual advances, requesting sexual favors, or engaging in other verbal conduct or physical conduct of a sexual nature with a client. And lastly, ARS Section 32, 4253B2D, defining sexual activity as intentionally viewing a completely or partially disrobed massage therapy client in the course of treatment if the viewing is not related to treatment under current practice standards and is intended to appeal to the prurient interest of the massage therapy client or the massage therapist. Also, 4253A16, failing to adhere to the recognized standards of the massage therapy profession, and 4253A20, which states violating board statutes, rules, or orders. At the end of the conclusion of the evidentiary portion of this hearing, I am going to refer you to the complaint and notice of hearing and respectfully request that you adopt the factual allegations as your findings of fact and the alleged violations as your conclusions of law as stated. After having done so, the state, on behalf of the public, respectfully requests the board to revoke respondent's license in this matter. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chairperson, members of the board, before the state presents its case, would Mr. Monahan or staff clarify for the record how respondent was served notice of today's hearing?
David, I'll let you handle that.
He was emailed, regular mail, and sent certified mail a complaint notice of hearing, which he signed for.
And he received that 30 days or more prior to today's date?
He did. He responded both times. He's done had twice.
Thank you.
And since the respondent is not available on the teleconference, would the state be interested in calling a witness if any witnesses are
available? Absolutely, yes. The board will quickly call the state calls the investigator, David Ellison. I apologize.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Oh, yes, we have to do
need to swear in. Would the parties who are adjudicating with this hearing please raise their right hand? Do you swear that the testimony you are about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Olson, you may proceed.
Please state, it's not you. Please state your name, your full name for the record again.
David Richard Olson III.
Thank you. What is your position with the board?
I'm the investigator for the board.
And what are your duties as the investigator for the board?
I investigate any and all incoming complaints received by the board.
And are you the responsible party for investigating all matters regarding unprofessional conduct?
I am.
And how long have you been in this position?
About 6 months.
Do you have a prior experience investigating crimes and or violations of unprofessional conduct?
Yes, I was investigator for the Arizona Board of Nursing for 7 years prior. And prior to that, I was an investigator for the Mississippi Board of Nursing for about 4 years.
Thank you. And this file was completed by the previous investigator, Andrew White. Is that correct?
It was.
And have you had time to review the file and adopt it as your own?
Yes.
If you had questions regarding the file, was the previous investigator available to answer any questions?
No.
Okay. Is the respondent licensed by this board?
He is.
What type of license does he hold?
A licensed massage therapist license, which expires 3/31/2022.
Okay, thank you. Got my other question. Did the board receive a complaint in this matter?
It did.
Please take a moment to review State's proposed Exhibit 1.
Bates number?
I'm not Bates numbered.
Okay.
2, 4. Bates page 4.
Okay.
You recognize this document?
I do. It's the complaint form completed by HG against the respondent on June 7th, 2021.
And is it a true and accurate copy of the complaint filed by HG?
It is.
And was the respondent noticed about the complaint?
He was.
Please take a moment to review State's proposed Exhibit 2. Bates, page 7.
Okay.
Do you recognize this document?
I do. It's the notice of receipt of complaint to the respondent that was sent to him right after the complaint was received.
Thank you. Is it a true and accurate copy of the notice of the complaint sent to the respondent?
It is.
And there are some date discrepancies on these documents. They say February 22nd, 2022. Is that due to an error with an automatic feature on Adobe?
Right. It's auto-generated date. So it automatically goes to the date that it was generated, not okay. The date that it was specifically sent.
So it's your contention it was sent February 22nd. It was sent in July of 2021 or
that's
June
correct.
Of 2021?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying that. Did you request a response from the respondent regarding the allegations?
There was an investigative questionnaire sent to him. And it was received on July 8th, 2021. That he completed.
Okay, thank you. Please take a moment to review State's proposed Exhibit 3.
Okay.
Do you recognize this document?
Yes, it's the investigative questionnaire.
Thank you. Did the board notice the respondent of his investigative review?
Yes.
Please take a moment to review State's proposed Exhibit 4.
Okay, it's the notice of investigative review for case 21-163 to the respondent.
Is it a true and accurate copy of the notice of investigative review?
Except for the auto-generated date, which once again pops up on that form.
Okay, thank you. So is it your contention that this notice of investigative review was sent in July of 2021?
Yes.
Thank you. Was the respondent properly noticed for his formal interview?
Yes, he was.
Please take a moment to review State's proposed Exhibit 5. Do you recognize this document?
I do.
And what is it?
It's the notice of formal interview for case 21-163 to the respondent.
Is it a true and accurate copy of the notice of formal interview sent to the respondent?
Except for the top auto-generated date, yes, that it was he was supposed to appear for a formal interview on Monday, September 27th, 2021.
Is it your understanding that this notice was then sent out in August of 2021?
That's correct.
Thank you. Was the respondent properly noticed for today's formal hearing?
He was.
Please take a moment to review State's proposed Exhibit 6. Do you recognize this document?
I do. It's the complaint notice of hearing that I sent to the respondent.
Is it a true and accurate copy of the formal hearing notice that you sent to the respondent?
Yes, it is.
And what is the date that you sent this document to the respondent?
I sent it?
On page 5 of 6 of the document.
January 21st, 2022.
Thank you. And did the respondent timely submit an answer to the complaint and notice of hearing?
He just submitted a answer saying he wouldn't be attending the meeting.
Please take a moment to review State's proposed Exhibit 7. Do you recognize this document?
Yes, I do. That's the letter he sent.
Is it true and accurate copy of the respondent's answer to the complaint and notice of hearing?
Yes, it is.
Does the respondent in his answer indicate whether or not he is participating in the hearing?
He is not. He states he's not going to participate in the hearing.
Okay. Thank you. The state is done with this witness.
Mr. Monahan, could I ask a clarifying question on Exhibit 7?
Absolutely.
Is that the accurate date at the top of that exhibit?
It's the accurate date for the first complaint notice of hearing.
Thank you for clarifying that.
He did send in a response to the second notice of hearing, and the only thing it said, it was, to whom it may concern, this is a duplicate notice. Please refer to my previous written response.
Yes, the issue was on our end, not his end. He had responded timely, so the second notice was just him clarifying that he had already responded to the first notice.
Are there any additional witnesses the state would like to question or bring forth?
Yes, the state before the state calls its witness, the state. Respectfully request to proffer proposed exhibits 1 through 7 into the record.
So we would motion for that?
The chairperson, you could either motion or at your own discretion, you could admit exhibits 1 through 7.
All right. I would like to admit exhibits 1 through 7.
Thank you. Okay, the state respectfully calls complainant HG.
I'm here.
Excellent. Okay, so please state your initials for the record again.
HG.
And thank you for being here this morning.
Could I interrupt? I'm sorry to interrupt. When the witnesses were sworn in, everyone heard the voice of Mr. Elson. I don't know if we heard HG, so you could clarify whether or not she also took the oath to be sworn in.
I do not think she did.
HG, would Mr. Augerton, would you do the honors, please, once again?
Yes, Madam Chair. HG, if you would raise your right hand, please. Do you swear that the testimony you are about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
The state may proceed.
Thank you. So, HG, thank you for being here today. Did you receive a massage from the respondent on May 28, 2021 at the Gallery Sports Club in Marana, Arizona?
Yes.
And was this your first massage?
Not at all, no.
If you don't mind, roughly how many massages have you had in your life? And a ballpark number is okay.
I've been getting massages for about 30 years and roughly two a month.
Okay. And had you had massages before with the respondent?
No.
And did you have a previous relationship with the respondent prior to the massage in question?
No, I've never met him.
Thank you. Now, would you please walk us through the massage you had on June 8, 2021, with specific attention to the allegations of misconduct?
I'm going to read my statement just from what I had sent earlier, but so I'll start off by saying by no means am I trying to draw attention to the situation, but I definitely wanted to be heard from what I experienced and don't want any other women to go through what I had gone through. Again, like I said, I'm not new to massage therapy. I've been getting massages for 30 years and plenty of them with men. Ironically, my main therapist is a male in Arizona and back in Wisconsin. I'm definitely not a modest person, but when it comes to massages, I typically like deep tissue work. Today with Jim, I have never felt so uncomfortable on a massage table in my life. He had me lying face up to start the massage. He started with the neck and upper shoulders. The first thing I noticed that his hands were shaking, which obviously was not the most relaxing feeling, but I was trying to get past that. He proceeded to massage the arms and hands, and then he put a washcloth over my breasts and rolled the sheet down to my pubic area. He then proceeded to massage my belly, which I have had done before in other countries by women, but the uncomfortable part was the fact that he was massaging down into the pubic area. At this time as well, he would brush right underneath the breast every stroke he could. He then proceeded down to the feet and legs, and this is when he went inside my inner thigh so high where it connects to the pubic area. He had me flip over and he started on the feet and lower legs. When he wrapped the sheets around the legs to get to the back of the thighs and glutes, he balled up the sheet and pressed it into the middle of my legs so high inside there and held it there for at least 5 seconds. He then continued to massage the back of the thighs and glutes, but would come around to the front of the pelvic bones and massage downward. He then proceeded to the back, which I felt very relieved at this point, until he lowered the sheet below my buttocks, which would be normally fine, other than that he massaged his hands down right into my low back and at the beginning of the butt crack. He then ended the massage with upper shoulders, but yet again, shaking, and would touch the side boob every stroke he could get. After the massage ended, he left the room. I got up as quickly as I could to get out of the room, get to the locker room without having him see me. I was in the locker room having so many thoughts going through my head, but one thing I did know is that I've never felt like this or have been violated like this before. Jim was most definitely inappropriate, and I shouldn't have to feel ashamed by sharing this.
Thank you very much for that. Now, I want to just follow up on a couple things that the respondent put in his answer, okay? So it's been stated by the respondent in his answer to the complaint notice of hearing that you don't know the difference between a washcloth and a folded towel. Could you reiterate again did the respondent use a washcloth or a folded towel?
I absolutely know the difference, and it was a washcloth that was covering my breasts.
And so, in your opinion, if the respondent were to have taken a bath towel and folded it 12 times over, would you have noticed that laying on your chest?
Yes, because it would be thick.
Thank you. And in his answer, the respondent seems to, you know, he makes assertions that that your complaint may have been about something else, that, you know, that you maybe had a sense of entitlement. Is this complaint related to anything other than the services you were provided by the respondent and the conduct of him on that day?
Absolutely not. Everything is regarding what he did in that massage room.
Okay. Thank you. And then, and please know that I'm taking this from his answer, but lastly, respondent indicates in his answer to the complaint notice of hearing that you could not have been assaulted because you continued to lay on the table for the duration of the 90-minute massage. Now, I'm not going to dignify that statement with a question, but I will ask, why did you not leave the table when you felt uncomfortable?
I question that as well, and all I can answer is, unless you've been in my position, you don't know what you're going to do.
Thank you. Thank you very much. After the massage and the day in question, did you take any action to report respondent's behavior to his employer?
I did immediately after walking out, as when I was at the front desk reporting, when I was in the locker room, I was waiting for him to leave the building. He immediately left, walked down the hallway, left the building without even checking in at the front desk and or myself. So when I knew he was out of the building, I went to the front desk like I would be checking out. And that is when I reported him, and they had brought in their other staff and all of that day to discuss.
And did you also file a complaint with this board?
Yes.
Thank you. And how long after the event did you file the complaint with this board?
Within a week.
Thank you. Are you aware what happened with the respondent's employment at all?
All I was told at the time was that he was no longer with the Gallery Sports Club, and mm-hmm. I wasn't aware of whether or not he quit or he was fired.
Okay. Thank you very much for your bravery today, HG. I don't have any other questions, but thank you for being willing to testify.
Thank you.
The state rests.
Thank you. Normally, we would ask the respondent if they had any witnesses, but since they are not here, this concludes the evidentiary portion of the administrative hearing. The board will now hear closing arguments. The state may present a closing argument.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the board, Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan, representing the state. I'll keep this short and sweet. As you heard today, the respondent committed actionable violations of board statute and rule against HG on May 28th, 2021, while receiving massage services in Marana. The respondent is not here to rebut those statements. He has denied the allegations. However, as you've seen, the complainant's comments to both the employer and the board were consistent with one another, and she acted quickly to alert people to the situation and what happened. The state just respectfully asks the board that, you adopt the factual allegations and alleged violations in the complaint and notice of hearing as your findings of fact and conclusions of law as stated. And due to the non-participation of the respondent, the state respectfully requests that you revoke this license. Thank you.
Thank you. Having heard testimony and reviewed the evidence and the arguments, the board will now discuss the case. The board can begin with general discussion or entertain motions at this time.
This is Vice Chair Moon. If I can just make a couple of comments from what we heard from HG. Firstly, there should be no shame. I want to make sure that she hears that. And secondly, of my expertise as well as Bailey's of speaking broadly and not specific to HG, because I don't know what her brain was doing, but there is a flight freeze response of survivors that have experienced sexual violence. What that does, if you are in freeze, that prevents you, all your circuitry in your brain, from being able to move, sometimes being able to process or think. So again, I don't want to speak specifically to what was happening to the neurobiology of HG, but that is a very common response that survivors don't know, experts know, which again can lean into feeling like you could have or should have done something, or something it should have concluded differently. That is the brain and the body in control when you want to do something and you can't. So that's just kind of my comment regarding some of the things that we heard today.
Thank you, Ms. Moon.
This is Michael Tapscott. I want to add to that too about HG's comments. This is a very savvy consumer, and you tend to lay on the table the whole time and think this can't be happening. That just must be a mistake, and it just adds up and adds up and adds up. And I don't think the length of time on the table has any bearing on anything. I'm very glad this person took the time to come forward. I think their statements are very accurate and very concerning.
Thank you, Mr. Tapscott. Ms. DeRoos, do you have anything that you would like to discuss or any comments you would like to add?
Oh, you guys said it so beautifully. This is Board Member DeRoos, and I was going to echo what Mariah said and Mr. Tapscott too. That freeze, you know, is so common when somebody is experiencing something that's really traumatic. And so I think that everything that was experienced falls within what would be whatever normal is for somebody experiencing that. And kind of staying on the table, I agree, is also just could be a survival mode too. So everything that was experienced is not unusual, I will say. So, and I also, just that the respondent has chosen not to be a part of this, I think that that says a lot as well. To wanting to revoke his license, I think seems appropriate. Since he doesn't seem to want to be a part of this. So I would assume, and I want a motion to make all the findings, I want to say it right, all the findings as a fact, and I know I'm not going to, and make a motion that all the findings are fact. Is there another way that I...
Yes, the motion would be that you would move that the board finds that the state has demonstrated by a preponderance of the evidence that the factual allegations in the complaint are true.
All the findings of fact are true. I'm going to, everything that Monique said, that was, I want to make an official motion to revoke the license too. Do I just make the motion for the
right at this point? State has demonstrated that findings of fact are true by a preponderance of the evidence, and the board adopts these allegations. And then we move to the conclusions of the law and then the discipline. But right now it's just findings of fact, true, and you adopt them.
Got it. So I just want to make the motion for the findings of fact.
I second that motion. And can we do a roll call vote, Mr. Agerton, please?
Yes, Madam Chair. Board Member Tapscott.
Aye.
Vice Chair Moon.
Aye.
Board Member DeRoost.
Aye.
Chair Ryder.
Aye.
Approved, 4 ayes.
The motion passes to accept the findings of fact in the complaint and notice of hearing. Next is the discussion for the conclusion of law. I would like to move that we accept the conclusion of law as stated in the complaint and notice of hearing.
This is Vice Chair Moon. I would like to second that motion.
And a roll call vote, please, Mr. Agerton.
Board Member Tapscott.
Aye.
Vice Chair Moon?
Aye.
Board Member DeRoost?
Aye.
Chair Ryder?
Aye.
4 ayes.
The motion passes to accept the conclusion of law as stated in the complaint and notice of hearing. Now the board needs to just consider the actions regarding this case. Do we have a motion for actions regarding this case?
This is Michael Tapscott. I move that we revoke Mr. Saylor's license.
I will second that motion. And Mr. Augerton, once again.
Madam Chair, Board Member Tapscott?
Aye.
Board Member DeRoost?
Aye.
Vice Chair Moon?
Aye.
Chair Ryder?
Aye.
Four ayes.
It is a unanimous vote that the license will be revoked. It is therefore ordered the license number 16208, held by James Saylor, is revoked due to violations pursuant to ARS 32-4253. This concludes this formal hearing, and the board's decision will be reduced to a written order and served on the parties. The parties will have further appeal rights that will be explained in the board's order. This concludes the matter. Thank you for attending. Our next case number. Actually, you know what? Before we move on, can we take a comfort break of 10 minutes, please?
Yes, the state has no outside witnesses for this matter, so it doesn't.
Thank you. Let's please take a 10-minute comfort break. Return at 10:53. It is now 10:53, and we will be resuming case number 21-106, Alfonso Rogers, massage therapy license 07324, is scheduled to be heard. The subject of this hearing is set forth in the complaint and notice of hearing. This is a formal administrative hearing to determine if there have been violations of the board's statutes and rules and whether disciplinary action is warranted. Mr. Augerton, will you please call roll for this hearing?
Yes, Madam Chair. Board Member DeRoost?
Present.
Board Member Tapscott?
Present.
Vice Chair Moon?
Present.
Chair Ryder?
Present. Let the record show the board members have been furnished with copies of the complaint and notice of hearing, the respondents' answers, and all pleadings of record. Will the parties please identify themselves, beginning with the state, followed by the respondents?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan here representing the state today.
Thank you.
For the record, my name is Monique Cody. I'm an Assistant Attorney General who is here as the board's independent advisor on this matter.
Thank you. And Mr. Rogers, are you present on the teleconference today? And it appears that we do not have Mr. Alfonso Rogers on the teleconference today. Is that correct? Can someone confirm that, please?
He's not on the call.
He's not on the call, Mr. Ellison?
No, ma'am.
Okay, thank you. All right. Since he is not on the call, Mr. Augerton, will you please swear in anyone who is a part of this case, including the state? Mr. Augerton, you're on mute.
Sorry, Madam Chair. Not ready for prime time. For the parties that are part of this adjudication, if you would raise your right hand. Do you swear that the testimony you are about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Is the state ready to proceed?
Yes, just one second, Madam Chair.
Cool. Not a problem. I will go ahead with my statement as well. Hearing of this nature differs from a court proceeding. The technical rules of evidence do not apply. Reliable hearsay evidence is admissible. The board will entertain objections concerning irrelevant, repetitious, or otherwise inadmissible evidence. However, the board is the sole judge in weight given to the evidence received. In a disciplinary proceeding, the state bears the burden of proof and shall go first in presenting the case. The respondent normally would follow the state and present their case. After it hears all the evidence and arguments of the parties, the board will deliberate and decide whether to dismiss the case or take appropriate disciplinary action. All persons who are called as witnesses in this matter, including the respondent, have already identified themselves and have been sworn in by Mr. Augerton. Before hearing testimony from any witnesses, are there any preliminary matters the board needs to consider?
There are no preliminary matters.
Thank you. Does the state wish to make an opening statement?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the board, again, Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan representing the state in this action today. Respondent currently holds, and I believe, an unrestricted license at this point to practice massage therapy in the state of Arizona. This case is in front of you today because the respondent committed multiple actionable violations of board statute and rule when, during the course of a massage session with DV, he exposed DV's bare breasts without written or oral consent and nipples, and then began to massage her breasts and nipples. And further, as she left the massage, he said goodbye, gorgeous, and made, you know, a rather lewd comment after the conduct that he had just engaged in. The evidence will also show that the complainant DV reported the allegations to respondent's employer within 3 days of the conduct occurring. Within those 3 days, DV also filed a board of massage therapy complaint and a police report with the Chandler Police Department. All those statements will be shown to be substantially consistent in the report to the board and the employer. And the evidence will also show that Rubb's massage terminated respondent after these allegations were reported. So at the end, at the conclusion of the, excuse me, I will get to the, so all these allegations, members of the board, support the potential violations of ARS 32-4253-A8, which states committing an act of malpractice, gross negligence, or incompetency. Also, ARS section 32-4253-A10, which states engaging in conduct that could result in harm or injury to the public. The allegations also support violations of ARS 4253-A14, which states engaging in the performance of substandard care by a massage therapist due to a deliberate or negligent act, regardless of whether actual injury to the person cared for is established. 4253-A15, which states engaging in sexual activity with a client as it relates to ARS section 32-4253-B2D, defining sexual activity as intentionally viewing a completely or partially disrobed massage therapy client in the course of treatment if the viewing is not related to treatment under current practice standards and is intended to appeal to the prurient interest of the massage therapy client or the massage therapist. And lastly, ARS 4253-B2E, defining sexual activity as massaging, touching, or applying an instrument or device by a licensee in the course of practicing or engaging in massage therapy to the breast of a female client unless the client requests breast massage and signs a written consent form. If the client is a minor, the consent form must contain the signature of the client's parent or legal guardian authorizing the procedure and outlining the reason for the procedure before the procedure is performed. ARS Section 32-4253-A16, which states failing to adhere to the recognized standards and ethics of the massage therapy profession. And lastly, 4253-A23, which states violating board statute, rules, or order. At the conclusion of the evidentiary portion of this hearing, I will refer you to the complaint notice of hearing that was issued in this matter and respectfully request that you adopt the factual allegations as your finding of fact and the alleged violations as your potential violations of law. And then again, after having done so, the state on behalf of the public respectfully requests that you revoke respondent's license for non-participation today.
Thank you, Mr. Monahan. Normally, I would ask that if the respondent would like to make an opening statement. However, the respondent is not present. Does the state have any witnesses that you'd like to present at this time?
Yes, the state respectfully calls Massage Therapy Board Investigator David Elson.
Please proceed, Mr. Elson.
Mr. Elson, please state your full name for the record again, please.
David Richard Elson III.
And what is your position with the board?
I'm the investigator for the Board of Massage Therapy.
And what are your duties as the investigator for the board?
I investigate all incoming complaints.
And are you the sole party responsible for investigating allegations of unprofessional conduct?
I am.
And how long have you been in this position?
6 months.
And do you have prior experience investigating crimes and or violations of unprofessional conduct?
I do. I did 7 years at the Arizona Board of Nursing and 4 years at the Mississippi Board of Nursing.
So, again, this file was completed by the previous investigator?
That's correct.
And had you had time to review the file and adopt it as your own?
I have.
And if the board's executive director... I'm sorry, if you had any questions, was the board's executive director available to answer any of those questions?
He was.
Thank you. Is the respondent licensed by this board?
He is.
What type of license does he hold?
He holds a massage therapy license, number 07324.
And is license currently active, suspended, or lapsed?
It's active.
Thank you. Now, did the board receive a complaint in this matter?
Yes, it did. It was received on July 22nd, 2021.
Please take a moment to review State's proposed Exhibit 1.
It's the complaint.
And is it a true and accurate copy of the complaint filed by DV?
It is.
Are you familiar with the allegations in the complaint?
I am.
Can you please state what the allegations are?
That the respondent exposed, rubbed DV's breasts and nipples and made inappropriate comments when she left.
Did she attempt to stop him at any point?
She did indicate that she said stop, and then he said he was done.
Okay. Thank you. And how long after the event was the complaint filed?
I don't actually have a date that she attended
I believe it's in the first sentence of the email.
Oh, 7/17. I'm sorry. So she did it. She had the massage on July 17th, and she actually emailed her complaint on July 20th.
Okay. So 3 days after the event?
Correct.
Thank you. And at Bates page 5, does the manager on that same exhibit, does the manager of Rubs Massage Studio in Chandler, respondent's previous employer, indicate that DV informed her of her complaint?
Yes, she notified the former investigator that she received a complaint and notified him that she had also filed a complaint with the Chandler Police Department.
And what's the police report number on that Chandler police document?
21-78377.
And just for the record, were you able to find that police report in the board's records?
No, I was not.
Okay, thank you. What is the manager's stated complaint that she reported to the board that DV had reported to her?
That he fully exposed DB's breasts without written or verbal consent, and that their company policy is that he couldn't do that under their company policy.
Okay. And are the allegations substantially similar to those reported to the board?
Yes, it is.
Does the manager also indicate that DV... Oh, we already got there. So the manager was aware of the report, the police report in Chandler?
That's correct.
Okay. And you already stated the police report number. What is the date of the email from CO, the manager?
It was sent on July 20th, 2021.
And that's 3 days after the event?
That's correct.
Thank you. Was the respondent noticed regarding this complaint?
He was noticed.
Please take a moment to review State's proposed Exhibit 2. Do you recognize this document?
I do. It's the notice of receipt of complaint to the respondent.
And was the request, was there a request to the respondent to respond to the allegations?
Could you repeat that question?
Yeah, I apologize. Was there an investigative questionnaire sent to the respondent eliciting a response?
There was.
Can you please take a moment to review State's proposed Exhibit 3?
It's the it's a blank copy of the questionnaire.
And is it a true and accurate copy of the investigative questionnaire regarding the respondent?
It is.
And is it completed?
No, he failed to complete it.
Do you have proof that it was mailed or emailed to the respondent?
I don't. Okay. I don't have proof that it was mailed or emailed.
Okay. So it very well may be that he never received the investigative questionnaire from the previous investigator.
Correct.
Okay. Just wanted to clarify that for the record. Did the board notice the respondent regarding his investigative review?
Yes.
Please take a moment to review State's proposed Exhibit 4. Do you recognize this document?
I do. It's the notice of investigative review that was set for 9 a.m. on September 27th, 2021.
And is it a true and accurate copy of the notice of investigative review sent to the respondent?
Yes.
Thank you. Was the respondent properly noticed for today's formal hearing?
He was. He was sent a complaint notice of hearing.
Please take a moment to review State's proposed Exhibit 5.
Okay.
Do you recognize this document?
It's the complaint notice of hearing that I emailed, mailed, and sent certified return receipt mail to the respondent.
And is it true and accurate copy of the formal hearing notice?
It is.
And did the respondent timely submit an answer to the notice of hearing?
He submitted an answer. Well, I mean, he repeated the questions over and over again, so I guess it would be an answer.
Please take a moment to review State's proposed Exhibit 6. Do you recognize this document?
It's his response to the complaint notice of hearing.
And Is it a true and accurate copy of the respondent's answer to the complaint notice of hearing?
Yes, it is.
Turning to base page 30 of Exhibit 6, respondent claims at the top full paragraph that DV claims she only remained in the massage for 20 minutes and that she actually stayed for 90 minutes, thus misleading the board. Are these statements made by a respondent consistent with DV's complaint?
No.
What did DV actually state in her complaint regarding 20 minutes?
Okay.
Well, maybe I can ask it easier. Did DV state that she wished she would have, that she wanted to get up after 20 minutes?
She did. She said she wanted to get up after 20 minutes, but stayed and eventually turned over onto her back.
Okay. Thank you. In your opinion, from review of the file, do you believe DV was misleading the board regarding the amount of time she remained in the massage?
No, because in the initial investigative report, the former investigator interviewed her a couple times, and he noted that her version of the events that occurred were consistent every time with what she put down in the complaint.
And in your opinion, other than the time frame that she remained on the table, does the respondent specifically refute the allegations in the complaint notice of hearing? In his answer?
No.
It is correct to say that he generally refutes it, though. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. All right. The state has no other questions. The state rests.
Does the state have any other additional witnesses you'd like to ask at this time?
No.
Normally, we would ask if the respondent had anything, any witnesses, but the respondent is not here. So this concludes the evidentiary portion of the administrative hearing. The board will now hear closing arguments, and the state may present a closing argument at this time.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board, Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan representing the state in this action today. you know, again, I'll make this one short and sweet. The complainant, the evidence shows that the complainant's report regarding the events that occurred on the day in question were substantially consistent across three different mediums, that she immediately reported these allegations to three different governing bodies, including the respondent's employer. And that, you know, the respondent was ultimately terminated due to this activity. So, you know, therefore, the board believes that the information testified to by the investigator shows that, excuse me, supports the violations in the complaint notice of hearing. And the state just requests, based on the evidence, that you adopt the factual allegations as your finding of fact and the alleged violations in the complaint notice of hearing as your conclusions of law as stated. And after having done so, the state, on behalf of the public, respectfully requests, due to the allegations and, again, the non-participation of the respondent, respectfully request that you revoke the license. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Monahan. I would also like to, for the record, admit exhibits 1 through 6.
I apologize. Let me proffer that for you. But thanks for catching that. I appreciate that. The state also respectfully requests that the board admit exhibits 1 through 6 into the record.
And I would like to admit those exhibits 1 through 6 for the record as well. Thank you. All right. Since there will be no closing argument from the respondent, the first item of discussion is a finding of fact. Would any of the board members like to discuss the findings of fact? I motion that the board accept the findings of fact as stated in the complaint and notice of hearing.
This is Michael Tapscott. I second that motion.
Can we do a roll call vote, please, Mr. Augerton?
Madam Chair, Board Member Tapscott?
Aye.
Board Member DeRoost?
Aye.
Vice Chair Moon?
Aye.
Chair Ryder?
Aye.
Four ayes.
Thank you. The findings of fact have been accepted. The next item is the conclusion of law. Is there a discussion on the conclusions of law?
This is Michael Tapscott. I think the facts, as they're stated, give clear reason to revoke this license.
Thank you.
Before we move into the discipline, we would need a motion to adopt the alleged violations as the conclusions of law.
Yes, I believe we're still in the discussing phase. So I will make sure that Ms. DeRoost or Ms. Moon don't have anything that they would like to discuss in this as well.
No, since both, since the respondent wasn't there, I think that the only thing that we have to go off of is the information that we were provided with. And so I agree that it would be the alleged allegations as the conclusion of law. This. So I can, unless Mariah has something.
No, I agree with both Mr. Roos and Mr. Tapscott.
Okay. So I propose a motion to accept conclusions of law as stated in the complaint and notice of hearing.
And I'll make a second to that.
And a roll call vote, please, Mr. Augerton.
Madam Chair, Board Member DeRoost.
Aye.
Board Member Tapscott.
Aye.
Vice Chair Moon.
Aye.
Chair Ryder.
Aye.
Four ayes.
Thank you. We have accepted the conclusions of law as stated in the complaint and notice of hearing. Next, now the board may consider any actions regarding this case. I would like to motion that we revoke the license of Alfonso Rogers, license number 07324, as well as violations pursuant to ARS 32-4253 and pay a civil penalty in the amount of $500.
Madam Chairperson, would you like to place a deadline for when the civil penalty of $500 would be due to the board?
Within 30 days.
And just for the record, Madam Chair, it may be difficult to collect that civil penalty once the license is revoked. Just to let you know.
I see. Thank you for that. I was not aware of that.
Those are two motions or just one?
That was just one motion. We need a second.
So sorry, that was to revoke the license and the $500 penalty to be paid within the 30 days?
Yes.
But it'll be difficult to collect if the license is revoked.
Correct.
But not difficult if the license is not revoked. Sorry, I still have questions around that, so I'm not sure I'm in a position to like second it. I want to.
No, absolutely. Can ask and we can get some clarification.
I guess I'm just wondering the best way to move forward, mostly on the $500 penalty, right? Like that's my biggest question is, can we still move forward with it? And what happens if he doesn't pay it? Nothing?
Once a decision and order is issued, if it's not appealed within the time frame, that $500, once the deadline passes, does become a debt that's outstanding to massage therapy. For $500, whether the state would invest resources to pursue that, I don't know, but that would be an option. If he doesn't pay it, deadline passes for appeal, the state could pursue options to collect a debt owed to the state.
But it has no bearing on the revocation portion of this motion. Is that correct?
That's correct. So right now the motion is just for the revocation with the $500 due within 30 days.
Thank you.
I'm okay with that. If anybody else has any other discussion, but I am okay seconding that motion.
This is Vice Chair Moon. I'm inclined to remove the payment of $500.
Would you like to, so we can create a new motion, Ms. Moon?
Yes, but I'll need help. Or can we make an amendment?
Right. The maker of the motion, could she, at this point, the chairperson could withdraw her motion, and then the person who seconded it could agree to withdraw, or the person who made the motion could amend the motion. So however you want to do it, just to withdraw it or amend it.
I will amend it. I will amend my motion. So what I would like to do is move that the license number 07324 held by Alfonso Rogers is revoked due to violations pursuant to ARS 32-4253.
And then I believe it was Mr. DeRoost that had seconded before. She would have to second the amended motion before the roll call vote.
I'll second that motion. Thanks.
Thank you. And can we do a roll call vote, Mr. Agerton?
Madam Chair. Vice Chair Moon?
Aye.
Board Member Tapscott?
Aye.
Board Member DeRoost?
Aye.
Chair Ryder?
Aye.
Four ayes.
Thank you. It is therefore ordered that the license number 07324 held by Alfonso Rogers is now revoked due to violations pursuant to ARS 32-4253. This concludes the formal hearing. The board's decision will be reduced to a written order and served on the parties. The parties will have further appeal rights that will be explained in the board's order. This concludes the matter. Thank you. Next, we'll be moving on to the investigative review files. Case number 22-115, Jonathan Riggs. License number 13639. This is a preliminary review of the information available to the board at this time. It is not a hearing. The board may consider summary action against license number 13639. Is the license holder present in this meeting? And if so, are you represented by counsel? And if we could just get confirmation from the board staff if Mr. Riggs is or is not present in this meeting.
Madam Chair, he's not here. I have no indication to believe he would be attending.
Okay, thank you. Investigator Elson, can you please provide a summary of the complaint against Mr. Riggs?
Absolutely, thank you. On August 18, 2021, board staff became aware of the arrest of respondent in Scottsdale for sexual abuse of a female client, O.S. Respondent failed to disclose these charges within 10 days as required by law. After obtaining a copy of the police report, it was discovered that on August 11, 2021, at approximately 1800 hours, while at a massage studio in Scottsdale, Arizona, OS reported that she felt the therapist's fingers touch her labia. She felt his fingers spread her labia and go between them. She jumped off the table and respondent immediately said, sorry, sorry, sorry. Respondent was interviewed by Scottsdale Police Department and admitted to touching OS breasts and vagina. That's it.
Thank you, Mr. Elson. Normally, we would invite the respondent to make a brief statement, but they are not here. So based on the information presented, do the board members believe that a possibility of irreparable harm has been made here today, supporting the need for summary suspension and moving to a formal hearing?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
This is Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan. Sorry for interrupting. Just one thing to think about, and maybe David can shed light on it. I know that the board was trying to determine whether he was in custody or not. That's an important thing to think about as far as if, you know, you're thinking about summary suspension today. One of the major caveats is that, you know, if he is in custody, then we don't have a potential danger to the public health and safety. But if he's not in custody, then we do. You believe so.
Yeah. And we've not heard anything one way or the other. We haven't been able to determine if he is in custody or if he is not.
I've looked him up on public access and I see no indication that he's in custody. Furthermore, I went to the Maricopa County Jail's website and did an inmate search for him, and he does not show up as an inmate of Maricopa County, which is where he would be for this length of time from the time of the offense.
So would it be safe to assume, just for public safety's sake, that if he is in fact not incarcerated, that we should proceed potentially with a summary suspension?
I can't find anywhere indicating that he is in jail.
Thank you. Are there any questions or discussions from board members?
This is Michael Tapscott. I know that I'm but one individual on this board, but I think we're all getting to know each other pretty well. And I think this is a pretty clear case where we need to have a summary suspension and take this to a formal hearing. I can't imagine anybody disagreeing with that.
This is Vice Wing Chair. I have a question. Do we also have the option just to go straight to revoking the license?
Not today. You would have to establish findings of fact and potential violations of law and move it to a formal hearing, which would be held in 35 days, or the summary suspension, which would, you know, take him out of practice until we can hold that formal hearing, with the understanding that once he does go into custody, if it's during that period, it may be difficult to notice him. So just things to think about, though.
Absolutely.
This is Board Member DeRoost, and Mr. Tapscott is correct. I think I'm in agreement that we can move forward with this summary suspension. And I'm not sure that it matters. I mean, I guess I don't understand all the ins and outs of if he was in jail. I still think that it should be summarily suspended just because you're not sure when he's going to be out. And it would feel better to me to know either way that he didn't have his license if he was to get out.
Thank you, Mr. Roost. I actually agree with you. In the event that he is incarcerated somewhere, we can't find him. In the event that he is released at some point, between board meetings, I think as a matter of safety of the public, that it would be wise to move forward with the summary suspension. So I would like to move that we summarily suspend the license of Jonathan Riggs, number 13639.
And Madam Chair, is that based on?
based on potential violations of?
You don't have to name each. You can just cite the investigative report if you want.
Okay. Based on the investigative report.
It's based on the potential violations and and factual allegations as contained in the investigative report?
Yes, that is correct. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Michael Tapscott. I second that motion.
A roll call vote, please.
Madam Chair. Board Member DeRoost?
Aye.
Vice Chair Boone?
Aye.
Board Member Tapscott?
Aye.
Chair Ryder?
Aye.
Four ayes.
Thank you. It is ordered that the license number 13639 of Jonathan Riggs is summarily suspended. This suspension shall remain in effect pending a public hearing and final decision by the Arizona State Board of Massage Therapy pursuant to ARS 32-3632. Our next case, number 22-131, Joshua Finley, massage therapist license 24766. Mr. Attorney General Monahan, you have an update on this case, is that correct?
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board. I have been working over the weekend with the respondent's attorney, who has already signed, and it's in your packet, a voluntary surrender of his license. It memorializes the fact that we do have allegations, because that's all we have right now. But we felt it was best to get that license out of the hands of the respondent, and this is what they were willing to sign. And it is disciplinary. It will be reported, and it will be in his file. If the criminal trial ends up in his favor and he ever comes back, we will still have that. So if you have any questions, I'm free to answer them. But the allegations were admitted to. There were questions of what was consensual and what wasn't. And so that's why we arrived at the agreement that we did.
Thank you for that. So at this point, Mr. Monahan, the board does not have to go through the investigative review process. We already have everything that we need.
Correct. You can just make a motion to accept the consent agreement as presented, and his license will be revoked.
Okay. I motion that we accept the consent agreement of Mr. Joshua Finley.
This is Board Member Drews, and I second that.
And a roll call vote.
Madam Chair. Board Member Drews.
Aye.
Board Member Tapscott?
Aye.
Vice Chair Moon?
Aye.
Chair Ryder?
Aye.
Four ayes.
So it is known now that the... Apologies, I'm jotting things down. That the license of Joshua Finley is revoked. If there are no further, let's see, there are no other, boy, we went through that a little bit faster than I thought we would, you guys. All right. So next up on the agenda, review, discussion, and possible action relating to update regarding HB 2438 massage therapy. Therapists. So the bill that we were made aware of in our last meeting. Fingerprinting and website information. And for this, I'm deferring to our executive director, Tom Alderton.
Thank you, Madam Chair and board members. There's been quite a bit of movement since your last meeting with House Bill 2438. It, in fact, has passed committee and passed committee of the whole. There are two documents in your packet if you want to make reference to either. The first is an actual copy of the bill as was introduced. The second is a copy of the floor amendment that was adopted in Committee of the Whole, and it's been adopted by the full House and sent to the Senate Committee of Reference. Staff met with Representative Longdon, the sponsor of the bill, and her committee staff and minority caucus staff on February the 1st and February the 9th, and the Committee of the Whole amendment that you see before you is a result of those discussions. So let me just probably in 60 seconds, tell you what the bill now does. The bill retains the existing authority of the State Massage Board to use the inked fingerprint cards and national background clearance process so that there is a determination of any prior felonies and or misdemeanors for applicants coming in for a license. In addition, the sponsor's primary intent was to add the protection of the DPS fingerprint clearance card, which will provide real-time information if there is an arrest and conviction to this and other boards, as they're currently being used elsewhere. And in 2 years, based on negotiations that the State Department of Public Safety is having with the FBI, in 2 years, there'll actually be the ability to have real-time reporting through the fingerprint cards to boards like ourselves on a national basis as well. So currently, it would be in-state real-time reporting, but within 2 years, it would be national reporting. As the bill was amended, it's also worth noting some other significant components in the bill. And as we communicated to Representative Longdon and her staff, this probably represents the very first statutory activity with the State Massage Board, almost back to inception, that directly addresses the issues of improving public protection or process by the regulatory board. The way the bill has now been amended is to provide the traditional assurance that adjudicated hearings will be available for public inspection on the board website. Now, you're probably aware of legislation that went through last year that negated the board's ability to contain information on this part of the website if the adjudications were more than 5 years old. House Bill 2438, if it's finally approved and signed by the governor, would restore the public's ability, which we currently do not provide, for the board information of adjudications to be searched by members researching individual therapists, regardless of the date of adjudication. In addition, there would be new authority provided for the board and accessible to the public that for the first time would include information involving non-disciplinary adjudications by the board, letters of concern, and so forth. This would be a new feature available at the board website, again, if the bill is approved and signed by the governor into law. The bill also provides something rather unique, which is a one-year waiver for the promulgation of rules by the state board, which still goes through the governor's regulatory review council and still requires advance public notice with the Arizona Secretary of State. But it removes the requirement that the board would have to eradicate three existing rules in order to promulgate two new rules, which is what is being proposed by the sponsor of the bill. In conversations that Representative Longdon and her staff had with other community stakeholders, and specifically individuals involved with the human trafficking response effort in the state, there would be two rules that the bill would ask this board to promulgate within the one-year period after the bill becomes law, which without an emergency clause would be 90 days after the last day or sine die of the current Arizona legislative session, which would put that in early fall. So the clock would start ticking in terms of the need to get the rules promulgated from basically early fall to when you're going forward. The suggestions made by the response community to human trafficking directly to the sponsor would be for two new items that would be mandated by the board. The board would require that a telephone number, toll-free number, would be promulgated in rule and required of all massage establishments that would provide a response to someone who felt they needed to contact and report an allegation of sexual impropriety by a state licensee. And that would be required to be available for public viewing at each of the locations in Arizona. The second new rule that is being requested by the bill for promulgation would be training for all licensees in the state of Arizona. And this would be presumably with new initial licensing. The board may want to discuss when this promulgation process proceeds of having this as a requirement for license renewal. But the initial requirement would be a primer for new LMTs licensed in Arizona on what to look for to discover what would appear to be sufficient signs of human trafficking at facilities across the state. So we'll get more information to you on the specifics of how rulemaking would proceed. Since this is a new board, I will indicate to you that we routinely work with outside counsel. The Attorney General's office is not involved or permitted to be involved with rules promulgation. for this board. So we used Jessica Thomas, who was actually a former legal counsel with the Governor's Regulatory Review Council. And if she were available, she would promulgate draft rules language, which we would submit first to the board and go through the promulgation process, which is fairly time consuming. There is a detailed process of prior governor's office approval, secondary review and approval by the governor's office, public posting and disclosure to the public under the Arizona Secretary of State, submission to the Governor's Regulatory Review Council, an initial workshop by GRC, a following hearing by GRC, and then if approved or amended, it would proceed from there and be added to the Arizona Administrative Code as part of the board's rules authority. And if you have any questions, I'll be happy to try to respond to you. I'm not aware of any interest in amending the bill further in the state Senate, but of course that is always a possibility in committee or on the floor. Absent of any amendments to House Bill 2438, it would return to the Arizona House of Representatives and would go back for final floor concurrence. If the bill were to be amended in Senate committee or on the Senate floor, it would have to come back to the House, where the prime sponsor and her co-sponsors would have the right to concur or not agree to the proposed amendments, and then it would be either referred to a simple conference committee for a specific change to the amendment adopted by the Senate, or it would be submitted to a full conference committee where the bill could be substantially rewritten by both committees of reference before final concurrence on both floors. So I'm just giving you the full possibility of what the process would be. But at this time, I'm not aware of any proposed amendments to the bill when it's heard in Senate committee. The other thing that I would advise the chair and the board is that this has been posted for action today. If the board so chooses, if you wanted to have discussion and potential endorsement of the bill as amended by the House, you would have that ability to take that action today, and staff would communicate that to the prime sponsor and the House co-sponsors. And if you so direct us, we would then send a letter to the Senate Committee of Reference indicating that the bill is sponsored by the Arizona Massage Board. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Augerton. I do have a question that you may or may not be able to answer, just hypothetically. Hypothetically, if this bill does pass, how does that look when with our already growing concerns of our website functionality and budget concerns? Is it going to affect the budget with these requirements of the board?
Well, Madam Chair, actually, no, I think is probably the best answer. Yes and no, no and yes. But basically, if you're asking the question that if the bill becomes law, do we have the current capacity to return the full list of adjudications by the board, the answer is yes. If you're asking if we have the capacity to add this new disclosure category of non-disciplinary actions by the board at the website, the answer is yes on that. The question you're asking, I know, is with a notification to the board by the Department of Administration that the website will be migrating and there's the potential for website improvement, and you're asking if we have the ability to take advantage of this moment in time. And since you're already aware of the fact that no funds have been approved for technology in the time that I've certainly been here with the board, and nor have funds been anticipated for this in the budget request, that the first opportunity to submit that would be September the 1st of 2022. So we have the existing capacity to comply with this law, and we have the ability to comply with the rules promulgation. Although when we hire outside counsel, it is a non-budgeted item, but I can't really discuss, since it hasn't been posted, more detail on the fiscal flexibility of the board to comply with 2438.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Board members?
This is Vice Chair Moon, and I'll be brief. I think we should endorse. I think leans into public safety, and I think we should be supportive of bills that could support our board and the work that we do.
I agree with that. My question is, does it require a motion?
Madam Chair, I always defer to the attorney, but I believe the answer would be yes, because I'm looking for you to take formal action publicly today, directing your staff to communicate on the behalf of the four of you directly to the sponsor, co-sponsors, and Senate Committee of Reference.
To you, Madam Chair, this is Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan. Essentially, you want a motion to, can be one motion to allow both things, to throw your support behind this, but also to approve staff to file on your behalf with the legislature today.
Okay. I would like to hear from Mr. Roos or Mr. Tapscott if they have anything that they would like to add or comment on regarding this type of support.
This is Michael Tapscott. I don't really have much to add. I think it's been well said. I think it's been very clear that this board's number one priorities are public safety. I respect that, and I think it's something that we all stand behind in a very united format, and so I support this bill for that reason.
Yeah, I agree. This is Board Member DeRoost, and I also support it as well. I think it strengthens our position with public safety, and so I think that is a good thing to support.
Very good. Then I would like to motion that that the board is allowed to support this sponsored bill and approve staff to file on the board's behalf.
This is Michael Tapscott. I second that motion.
And a roll call vote, please, Mr. Overton.
Board Member DeRoost?
Aye.
Vice Chair Moon?
Aye.
Board Member Tapscott?
Aye.
Chair Ryder?
Aye.
That's four ayes. Just as a postscript, Madam Chair and board members, the sponsor of the bill, and not really in response to our request, although I wish I had thought of it, but the sponsor of the bill volunteered that she would make the time available this summer after the adjournment of the legislative session to meet with the board and all other stakeholder groups and do kind of an overview, statutory overview, of what is currently in Arizona revised statutes as it pertains to the industry, and be receptive to a process for input and other potential changes that would address the needs of the industry and the needs of the regulatory procedures we currently have. So I wished I had asked for it. I did not. She volunteered it before I could have asked. And I just would, on the record, I guess, tell the board that, again, this represents certainly kind of an unprecedented opportunity for discussion with the legislative branch of government about the journey that the board has taken since its inception in 2003 and where you find yourselves now in 2022. And at the very least, it's a very gracious offering, and at the very most, it represents maybe an overdue but certainly needed chance for all stakeholder groups, the schools, the individual licensees, the regulators, and others, to maybe accept this invitation and be part of a process in calendar 2022. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Overton. I would love that opportunity. I'm assuming that invitation would be separate to our already regularly scheduled board meeting, so it would be a separate meeting. But if she is willing to dedicate some time to that, I would be absolutely happy to accept that invitation. So maybe we can talk about a future date to set something like that up. That would be amazing. All right. Let's see. Okay, so next up, I'm going to be deferring to Mr. Michael Tapscott on relating to massage therapy licensing qualifications and requirements. So, Mr. Tapscott, the virtual floor is yours.
Thank you very much. I'm going to attempt to present here. I'm used to doing this. I'm a teacher. Let's see if it works on my end, though. Okay. I would like to talk to you all briefly, maybe 5 minutes or so here, about Title 32, Section 4222, which is qualifications for licensure, more specifically subsection E, which says the board by rule, shall establish communication proficiency requirements related to an applicant's ability to protect health and safety in connection to the practice of massage therapy. And this leads to the Arizona Administrative Code and question number 6 on the application, which is now referred to as English proficiency, and asks if English is your native language. If it is not, what is it? And then requires that applicants take a English proficiency test, a TOEFL or a TOEIC test. I want to frame this discussion, and I know I can't speak for the whole board, but I think it's been made very clear today that this board places an emphasis on public safety and also encouragement of business in Arizona. And so I kind of want to frame that discussion in this light, because I think that this ruling was intended to ensure public safety, but really lacks supportive evidence that it does so. And I'm very open to evidence being presented that it does so, but I've really not been able to find any. And then I think it creates an excessive burden on those wanting to perform massage therapy in Arizona and even business owners of massage therapy establishments. And so let me explain. In this meeting, actually one of these meetings in December, Sergeant Mike Walters said that, you know, rarely, if at all, do victims of sex trafficking ever possess a massage therapy license. And I think it's quite obvious that, you know, this is not part of the modus operandi of criminal organizations to get massage licenses to operate under them. They simply don't need that approach. And further, you know, in Arizona State University's, from their Office of Sex Trafficking and Intervention Research just last year, they reported that sex trafficking victims were, the majority were white and presumably English speaking. So enough said there. That's kind of the criminal side of this that concerns me. But the legitimate practitioner side that concerns me is that every week I have somebody contact me interested in going to massage school, and quite often their concern is, will I pass the English proficiency test if English is not my native language? And by the way, these aren't just people coming from other countries. These are sometimes residents of Arizona who learned Spanish first. And I work for an Hispanic, serving organization, Gateway Community College. That's our predominant student body there. And I have to tell them, you should be worried about passing this test, that Arizona State requirements are fairly average, that they expect a score of 80 on the TOEFL test. But our current ruling is that you need a score of 100 on the TOEFL test, which is also what Harvard requires. And that seems very excessive to me. And it's obvious it was set at an unpassable limit. Further, when we look at other Title II professions, Title 32 professions, pardon me, that are closely related to massage therapy, like incomparable, you know, risk and physical vulnerability, such as aesthetics and cosmetology, they don't have any English, you know, proficiency tests whatsoever. And you might say, well, those aren't comparable in vulnerability, but they really, really are. If you look at what an esthetician does, they can apply acid peels to your face, and they can do bikini waxing. And anybody who's had either one of those services done can tell you that it's much more vulnerable than massage therapy. So I think it's an excessive burden. And then when we look at clients themselves, I actually think this ruling is miscalibrated, and that's to put it nicely. 20% of our constituents, of residents of Arizona, speak a second language in their home. And, we have public clinics at Gateway, again, where our students practice on the public. We do this every 2.5 months or so. And, just 2 weeks ago, when we had our last clinic, and it happens every clinic, every time, we had 10 individuals come in who only spoke Mandarin or only spoke Spanish. And wouldn't they be better served? Wouldn't they be safer if they could have massage services from somebody that understands what they're saying? So I actually think this poses a threat to public safety, putting these type of limits. So what I want to do is I've sat here and kind of talked about this to all of you. And I've talked to, by the way, my fellow board members about things that they are more experts in than I am. And so I don't mean to do that. I really want to hear your input. But in conclusion, I think there's lack of evidence that this creates any public safety and actually may harm. It's an excessive burden on massage therapists and massage businesses, by the way. The three largest employers of massage therapists in the country are Massage Envy, Elements, and Hand and Stone. Combined, they have well over 100 outlets in Arizona. And I can tell you right now for a fact that every last one of them has job openings right now. And we have people that would like to fill those job openings that have the legal right to work here in this country, or were born here in this country and have the legal right to work, and are having a difficult time doing that. And then, again, are we protecting our non-English speaking clients as well with this? So, I was talking to the head of our nursing program at Gateway, and I said, what's your English, requirement for licensure? And they said, there is none. And I said, but you guys can inject medicine into somebody. And they said, well, yeah, but we consider, if you can graduate our program, you obviously have communication proficiency. And I argue that we've got a 700-hour requirement that is very functional at ensuring that massage therapists can safely practice, and that graduating from a board-approved school would meet communication proficiency. But I would like to open this up, to the other members of the board and hear your feedback on this.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
I guess my question would be, well, first of all, I didn't know the percentage. I didn't know the score that needed to be obtained on the TOEFL or TOEIC for massage therapy requirements. I would be curious, because this is not my forte at all, I just am aware of the requirements, but I would be curious as to what other boards across the nation do utilize this, because I understand that there are many boards that do require the TOEFL and the TOEIC for their board licensing. And I would be interested to know what their percentage pass rate is. You mentioned Harvard, that's very interesting to me. So I'd like to learn a little bit more about the historical uses of the TOEFL and TOEIC across other boards, professional regulated boards, and within those boards, what their score is that they're requesting their students graduate.
This is Vice Chair Moon. Thank you, Mr. Tapscott, for the presentation. I feel like this is my need because, again, this is not my area of expertise to solicit more information from maybe historical context of, the public safety factor of why this was put into our requirements and kind of the percentage. Yeah, the 100% was very shocking to hear. So I feel like I need to lean in more and hear about all of the stated information that's been presented.
Well, and I would like to, I couldn't agree with you more, by the way. I mean, we've had a member from the AMTA at this very board, you know, mention that this was designed as a barrier to prevent foreign speaking individuals from receiving massage licenses because they believe that's what was driving sex trafficking. And obviously, you and I both know that that's a very erroneous way to look at things.
If I can chime in one more time, I would love, and I know that I positioned the question to Sergeant Mike about the percentage, but I would love to vet that more. That may have been a subjective or just guesstimation, and I'm not sure if we should be basing that on a factual, even though, I mean, the survivors that we serve, it's trending towards there's not a lot of action in massage parlors, but I would love to vet that number a little bit more as we continue to use it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Thank you.
This is Board Member DeRoos. And are you proposing that we do away with it completely or just lowering the percentage?
At this point, we're only discussing it to gather more information. And maybe in the future, there will be an action. But there's no action being taken.
No, I know. I'm just wondering what Mr. Topscott is proposing. Like, yeah,
I appreciate that. I am actually proposing that we do away with it. I'm proposing that graduating from a board-approved massage school shows communication proficiency, as we've seen a lot of similar professions in Arizona. My concern is a lot of things, but some of the things I didn't bring up is, for example, right now I'll get a student who has a learning disability but was born here, couldn't pass an English test, but they can pass massage school because it's very visual and we give them time to read the text and all that kind of stuff. They have time to work through this stuff and they make excellent massage therapists. But something like this, if it was applied to them, would be a barrier to employment. And yet we're not seeing those type of cases in front of our board that those individuals are coming in front of us as an endangerment to society. I actually think the massage schooling process is working as a very good, safe process for malpractice type of stuff where somebody is just doing something harmful. It's quite obvious we see a very different type of case here. So anyway, yes, I am proposing that.
Well, and it's an interesting thing because I think it also, I loved the argument. I think people being able to get a massage in their native language, I think you make a really good argument about that. We also create rules and barriers for safety as well. So there's two parts to this. We don't want to hinder people from being able to, get a massage, become a massage therapist, but we also want to protect people. And, you know, is that the best way to protect people, by doing the English test, or is there another way to do that? And I don't have the answer. I'm not saying to do, but I am curious about all of that. So I'm open to maybe a little bit more of a discussion around that.
Yeah, agreed.
I agree. I would like to gather more information on statistics, like I've mentioned before. And I think that, the more that we are informed, then we can make a better decision.
Great. With your permission, then I'll gather more stats and present again to the board when I have those.
Absolutely. And permission not needed. Just let us know ahead of time and we'll add it to the agenda.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
A couple of minutes of your time, if you don't mind.
Yes, please.
The issue was first actually brought to the board by Mr. Tapscott in a letter that he sent me on November the 18th of 2020. And that was followed by testimony from the Institute of Justice and a letter we received here at the board on December the 1st, 2020. And litigation was threatened against the board by Paul Avalar with the Institute for Justice if the change did not proceed on this particular issue. Now, before you even consider what the issue is, you need to know where the exemptions already exist. Because of the governor's universal licensing bill, there is no ability to require TOEFL or TOEIC of any licensee who, applicant for licensing who comes in, regardless of their ability to speak English, if in fact they're applying under universal. which of course is what happens with the California applicants all the time, who also do not have any MLEX score, and in most cases do not have any massage training, and also don't speak English. So the mechanism by which people come from Asian countries through California as workers, many of them who are arrested for sex trafficking and prostitution, are allowed to plead down to misdemeanors of no trespassing and disorderly conduct, show up at the Arizona Board for licensing, and also do not have to take the TOEFL or TOEIC. Also, individuals applying from other states under reciprocity do not have to provide cooperation with the TOEFL or TOEIC. So the only group left required to take TOEFL or TOEIC are students in Arizona that English is not a first language for, who, of course, are already exempt from the MLEX exam, unlike all the other applicants coming in from the other states around the country. And with regard to who's getting licensed in the state, the individuals that are coming in from California who have no massage training, who are of age and origin, who, in fact, many of whom have prior criminal charges, and we give licenses to, they represent at least 15 to 20% of your database. So the testimony by the tip squad, the tip line squad a few months ago, does not represent an actual depiction of who are receiving Arizona licenses, who in fact are often then subsequently arrested in Arizona on prostitution and again allowed to plead down to misdemeanors. So, and I don't know if the board investigator wants to weigh in. I see his camera just came up. But the majority of people that we're giving a license to on your behalf are exempt from TOEFL and TOEIC. And the only people asked to comply are people in the Arizona school system. But the fact that it is not being used on the people that are applying from California represents a fiscal savings to the cartels, which is what has made this an issue in the past. So if you discuss this issue further, you may want to have some law enforcement briefing by the FBI and others here in the state currently involved with money laundering, human trafficking, prostitution, and so forth, and get a full spectrum, full dimension understanding of how Arizona is the gateway state through its licensing for human trafficking and prostitution across the country, particularly in Texas and in Florida. So it's not just a simple policy discussion. There are ramifications that would probably benefit from others coming in to discuss this as well.
I appreciate that, Mr. Arbuton. Very well said. Mr. Tapscott, hopefully you caught all of that so that you can jot it down and find some more information for us. So I appreciate it.
Yes, I did, and thank you. And by the way, that's very accurate from what I understand too. And currently we'll have students that will go to school here, apply for a license in California so they can use universal reciprocity to come back so that they don't have to take, you know, TOEFL tests. So that route does exist. There's no doubt about it.
Interesting.
It's just sad that our own residents have to use it.
All right. We will be moving forward. Discussion and possible action items for future massage board agendas. I'd like to kind of backtrack to our call to public this morning and add on our next agenda a bit more discussion on requesting a budget increase. This is foreign territory to me. So I wouldn't even know where to begin, how that process looks. It's obviously needed. And so I think, you know, just kind of knowing where starting point is, how does the board get involved with that? Who do we go to for that? You know, we see the budget reports and all of that. And again, I'm a massage therapist by nature. I'm not a numbers gal. I think that adding that to the agenda would be beneficial for all of our learning to see what we can do to help have a better budget so that we can, you know, utilize our board more efficiently and our board staff. Are there any other discussions or possible action items for future massage board agendas? Okay. The next board meeting date is Monday, March 28th at 2022 at 9 a.m. to be held via video conference. And I want to let everybody know that industry leader and author and pathology queen Ruth Werner will be joining us and presenting on the importance of understanding pathology, contraindications, and communications with clients and how to impact. To also make it really great for any massage therapist logging on, getting those three free continuing education hours that the board is now offering once a year. We figure anytime we can add an industry leader in there, it will be helpful. So spread the word that Ruth Werner will be joining us at our next meeting. If there is nothing else, anybody have anything else you want to add before I use my gavel? Tony.
Yeah, I just want to touch on thank you to the therapists that have emailed info for your CE credits. I did get your emails. And if you have not submitted that, go ahead and just email info and I'll add your credits to your account. Thank you.
Thank you, Tony. And I just want to, you know, publicly shout out and thank Mr. Tony Wilcox for all of his work that he does behind the scenes. And all of the board staff, truly, you guys work nonstop, all hours, weekends, and your efforts are not going unnoticed. So thank you, thank you. That concludes this meeting. It is February 28th, Monday at 12:12 p.m. This meeting is adjourned.